You're joining us in front of the telly. Like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Jacob.
Hey, Angel.
How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, did you know we do a podcast?
I kind of figured out that we did a podcast.
I would like someone to send us word somehow, throw a letter in a bottle and hope it comes to one of us, or one of the myriad of things you need. We are in a communication age. You have all the options. I would like to know how many people listen to us at faster speed than one. Do you do that? I just started doing the faster speed thing. Have you ever tried that, or do you do that?
So when I edit, I do the faster speed. So I do it at 1.5 times so I can still hear and understand things, see where it's going slow, but it speeds up how long it takes to get to the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. So, I do that, but when I listen, I don't listen fast.
Oh, I got a couple of shows that podcasts or YouTube shows that don't come out every day. And so I don't speed those up because for the shows that come out daily, I worked my way up to 2x speed, and I can hear it and process everything, but I'm just not having to sit around for 3-5 hours. I can get done quicker. And then when I can't speed them up, because there's certain, like, when you're connected to certain Bluetooth devices, it streaming at 2x speed just fucks with them. They can't do it, like my car. Mm-hmm. So when I have to listen to them again on normal speed, it messes me up. I'm like, oh my God, it's like you're talking through water. So that's why with the shows that I really enjoy listening to, it's like, why am I going to skip through shit I like? Right. Or like, I don't have to. But I wonder, like, in editing, you're not the one to ask, because like, you hear us so much. Oh, and God. You were there for the regular speed. But I would love to hear if any audience member, I mean, first off, always give us feedback. I can't stop breathing. But if you listen to us at a faster than one speed, is there anything funny that comes out of that? Like, do we sound?
We sound like crazy.
How do we sound?
By the way.
I bet we do.
And the 1.5 speed of us talking is funnier than us talking.
Probably.
Yeah. Like, our jokes are not good.
If we get a lot of feedback saying, like, oh, everybody listens at fast speed, we should both smoke pot and just go slower. Fuck you. You gotta listen to me at normal speed. I'll work the system.
Then they'll be listening to us at 3x speed, and it'll just be
if
fast
it's
speed.
Even possible. My app only goes up to 2.
Oh. Okay. I don't know. I mean, I just realized that it did that, and that was perfect
for me. I
feel
like the kids, this is normal for the kids, and I'm just now, I feel like I'm a late adopter to the faster listening thing, and I enjoy it. I get a lot more in. Just download it right in my fucking brain.
Yeah. Well, I don't listen to anything that it benefits me to go faster. So I just haven't, except for editing.
Yeah.
And then go ahead.
No, you finish.
I was just saying when I add it to Bandcamp, what is it called? That's not what it's called. GarageBand.
GarageBand, yeah.
When I add it to GarageBand to add my intro and music, that's when I listen to it at regular speed.
We got music? No, I haven't.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I can't stand myself. I can't stand myself.
I hate listening to me too.
Well, that's why you're the editor.
I just think that we're funny and because I want to talk about TV and force people to hear me. So
do you have any life hacks to your podcast? Do you listen to a lot of podcasts?
I only listen. I have a lot of podcasts in my queue, but I really find myself only listening to a few. regularly.
Yeah, that's what happened to me. Like, I got, you were there. I was like, guys, you got to hear about podcasts. Also, let's do one. And I was listening to so many podcasts, and now I'm down to like on the reg. I, you know, check every day is like, I'm on like three. That's usually the way it goes. I'll just shuffle through it, but it won't get more than three. I'm more of a YouTube guy, which, you know, those are basically the things I watch on there, basically podcasts, but
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but this is our podcast.
Yeah. Is it? Yes. This is our podcast. And today we're talking about stuff. I mean, you know, it's mainly TV and you know, us being assholes about things, like being a liberal, but but in particular, being a conservative. Speaking of which, we just watched a thing. I mean, no, it was Saturday, I believe. It might have been Sunday. But we watched a thing where, like, Nazis, like, carrying around an actual swastika flag and all that were parked outside of a drag show.
I heard about the, I'm still on my bingecation from Daily News. So I haven't, I tuned in for Steven Crowder's divorce, but I didn't, I just heard about the drag show, the Nazi drag show thing. I haven't seen any particulars now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know what was going on, but it's just like, they were just yelling, "There will be blood." And the cops are just, milling around like nothing, no threats are being made, or you know, whatever. And then nobody attacks the Nazis. I'm assuming they were here for the Nazis, but you know, whatever. Yeah. Maybe the police were actually there to protect the drag show participants from the Nazis, but who knows?
Sure.
Who knows?
It's anyway. All Brooklyn 999 out there.
It's anyway, just Brooklyn 99, but yeah.
99 and 9. Oh, that was Herman Cain's 999 playing.
But I think, we're go ahead.
I think man should introduce today's episode because as a man, I need to take control of. No, I'm joking.
We're going over
two very supposed to be female empowering movies, and one does it really well, and Run, in my opinion, fucks the pooch hard. We're gonna go over 9 to 5.
Yeah, which we have talked about before.
Did we?
Yeah.
Do we go over or do we just talk about it?
I have no idea.
We gotta start this to our own podcast.
It's out of my mind once I edit it. Once I edit it, it's gone.
I remembered
laughing about the pot scene and like how funny that was.
I think we talked about it, but we didn't really go over it. So we're doing 9 to 5 and we're also doing Working Girl.
Yeah.
And they're only 10 years apart, but the marketing treats them like they're the same movie. And I almost feel like the zeitgeist has sort of thought of them as similar movies. I know this.
Oh, yeah.
And you said the same thing. I had no idea what the fuck 9 to 5 was about once I watched it. Like, what I thought it was and what it was, completely two different things. If anybody hasn't seen this movie, this is definitely the better of the two movies.
Yes.
And you should just watch it because it's awesome.
It's hilarious. Yeah. So, I agree with you. 9 to 5 is the better movie. And the way that the two are so supposedly so close in the, you know, social zeitgeist, like that concept of women working for theirs, working 9 to 5, the actual song by
Dolly Parton.
Thank you. Cause like Chris got into my head because he called her Cher.
What?
But he knew he was wrong as soon as he said it, and then it's just like, now it's just like, no, what was her name? Because it wrong. Yeah. No. Yeah, the song from Dolly Parton, like there's a time in my life when I thought they were the same movie. So you know, like I thought that I had seen Working Girl before, but it turns out I had seen neither.
part. There's
no familiarity in before watching these movies that I had seen everything, except for the fact that I knew the song 9 to 5. So obviously, yeah. I have been singing it since the 80s.
But I literally just thought it was women in the workplace and being empowered. And mm-hmm. I think too, like, because Working Girl and 9 to 5 both seem to like do the rerun circuit on Turner Broadcasting channels, mm-hmm. like TNT or TBS. Mm-hmm. They were always in some kind of circulation. And so I think I too just sort of like confused them, mm-hmm. like thinking Sigourney Weaver was a 9 to 5 and that 9 to 5 was part of the soundtrack to Working Girl.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even think of Jane Fonda. Or any of that stuff. And so, and then when you
actually Harrison Ford. Down, it was like Sigourney Weaver and the 9 to 5 song. Like, those are the only things I knew about Working Girl and 9 to 5, exactly.
And then it's so surprising. I do think it's a good pairing because when you do sit down and watch them, not only can you finally, like, detach, separate them in your head, if everybody else. I mean, there's two of us. There's got to be other people who also got this confused. Right. Once you watch them together, it's so interesting and fascinating, the contrast between the two movies as far as like what they're trying to say and even how they're trying to say it.
Right.
And again, only 10 years apart. Like,
well, not even 10. 9 to 5 came out in 1980. Working Girl came out in 88.
Oh, I think it was 79. Not even 10 years. And that just shows you like, the Reagan Revolution and the 80s, how much of a difference it made.
Yeah.
Because I think Working Girl probably is more indicative of the overall media message at the time. You saw a lot of movies like, I remember Baby Boom with Diane Keaton. Mm-hmm. That was definitely a movie that was like, I mean, it's been a while since I've seen it, so maybe I'm wrong. We can add to the list. But I remember that being a movie about you can have it all, be a mother and super successful and all that. And that was a big feminist, we're going to say white feminist statement. I don't know mm-hmm. what wave it was in the 80s, but that was the big statement, can I have it all?
Yeah.
And the can I have it all question, and again, the movies answer it differently. The can I have it all with Working Girl, I mean, shit, she doesn't even want it all. She just wants one part. But the 80s mentality of can I have it all is still trying to fit the patriarchal mold
mm-hmm.
while still trying to claim your femininity.
Right.
And so that's where the conflict comes into play. Because, I mean, we see now this is a lot more... it's more and more familiar. I mean, this is how your household works. My household works. The woman is the breadwinner. Mm-hmm. So you can have that the career and be professionally successful. And then, you know, we don't have kids, but if we did, me and Chris would be the caregivers. So you can have what you want. I wouldn't even say have it all, because have it all still plays within that patriarchal mindset of be the main caregiver and the breadwinner or the career success. And in our fucking hyper capitalist society, especially in the goddamn excessive 80s, having it all, the career portion is you have no life. Like, the words work-life balance, they placate that idea these days. They don't fucking mean it, but they didn't even try to placate it in the 80s.
Well, I mean, so like one of the things that I have enjoyed about my new job, but like I had access to this information at my old job and would still have access to it. But we've been working with someone who does a training based on generations. And one of the things that she says is because like basically we're working now, like boomer is the oldest that we're going to have in our workforce. Right. And, you know, the boomers came about because there was like a baby boom. And there were way too many of them. I think they outnumbered their parents 3 to 1. So like their parents' generation was outnumbered by that generation 3 to 1. So they had competition in everything, you know, and especially work. So there were ways in which to solidify their role as the, you know, like in the work, that work environment, which was to become a subject matter expert and then not train anyone else so that no younger person who would settle for less money would take their position, and or they would or they're planning to die at their desk, right? Like, this is their work ethic is based on, you know, like their parents going through the depression or them going through the depression, or, you know, like things like that as little kids, because they're still like, you know, super young people who went through the depression, but they technically aren't boomers, but, you know, like that mindset and that growth and that, what you pass on because of that trauma in the workforce was that. So like the high narrative in the 80s, where boomers were still, you know, like kind of young, you know, compared to 30 years later, right? Where they're still like the, you know, leading employment, that mentality was, that's how you work. You worked, if you're working, then you're giving your all to the work, which a man could do because he wasn't, you know,
tied down
socially responsible for taking care of the family, making sure that the children, you know, like receive love and guidance and all that stuff. You know, they were only there to be, what did your dad say? What did your dad say? And dad would say whatever the mom said, if he was smart. And so, you know, like that's like pretty much the full extent socially that, you know, men were where men were at during the 80s with their work. So when women are trying to go into the workplace, they're the reason that they were pushed aside or not considered or whatever is because eventually they'll want kids and then they won't be able to give all this time, or they won't want to give all this time or whatever, right? So then they were kind of pushed aside preemptively because this is what, you know, the expectation was eventually they're going to want kids and they're going to want, because that's what women want. So if that is the social structure, I mean, like I was reading an article in The Atlantic that was giving statistics for women in the workplace, and it ended in 84, which is halfway between when 9 to 5 and Working Girl came out. And not only was that article trying to show that women weren't being discriminated against in the workplace because those values that would make it discriminatory didn't account for like the difference in pay or the difference in whatever. You know, they were talking about how women were not choosing work full time, and that the percentage of wives with kids that were working, you know, even though it had increased, those women still only wanted to work part time or wanted to, you know, start their own business at home, like where they are knitting or selling homes or, you know, something that they can do part time, make money, but still be there to take care of the kids and things like that. And so they were using the fact that this is what women wanted, you know, at that time as why they weren't being discriminated against with pay and all of that stuff. And that they, in fact, their choice to try not to work full time so that they could also take care of kids in the home was part of their discrimination against the workplace, which is why they weren't making as much money. You know, like even women who had higher educations, they saw that discrepancy. Like women who had a higher education were not earning nearly as much as men with the exact same education. But, you know, they were earning either just a little bit more or just a little bit less than white men with high school education. And, you know, it was just like, so there's times where women earn more, but like, how much better do you have to be as a woman? Anyway, this is what we're looking at, like the society where women are increasingly growing in the workplace. Mothers are choosing to also go to work as opposed to just staying home to take care of the kids. And so they're examining that social construct in these two movies without but Working Girl doesn't really examine it, whereas 9 to 5 gets to examine those different aspects, the part-time aspect, the working mother's aspect, all of that in dealing with, you know, like their workplace.
Working Girl has a better, well, let's like, we haven't cut to the chase yet besides saying 9 to 5's done it better. 9 to 5, let's do quick why it's done better. Recaps. And then we'll go into each movie. 9 to 5 does it much better because its solution to the problems, and I agree that with the three different characters, you get to explore three different versions of the woman in the workplace story. You have Lily Tomlin, who's like does more than she's paid to do.
Yeah.
And
she's a mother with four kids.
She's also a mother who has to take care of her kids when she is done with work, but at work, and we've seen this person in our lives. If this person were to go, the whole place would fall apart. And she is definitely undervalued by the company and underpaid as a result. Mm-hmm. Then you have Dolly Parton, who is the picture of the sexual harassment at work and yeah. is treated in that way. Like, that's the lens that she's there. And then you have Jane Fonda, which I feel like the first two, Lily Tomlin and Dolly Parton, their archetypes, if I sat down and write this movie, I would absolutely add them, because I think they're like, intuitively, that's the first couple of things you think of. Undervalued right. and the sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. I find Jane Fonda, while probably the most boring character in the movie, the most interesting perspective, because she's the divorced woman who now has to provide for herself and is getting into the workplace late. And I don't think that's something that you would automatically think of when writing this movie.
Right.
There are other perspectives, of course, but I think you're topping it at three. We need screen time for everybody. But right. I think Jane Fonda has a very interesting story to tell. And so by having all three of these women, you can tell those different perspectives. And the point is, and why what 9 to 5 does better in a working girl, and we'll get into that extensively, is 9 to 5 solutions to these problems don't come from an already dysfunctional patriarchy. Like they don't mold themselves to the work. They mold work policies to what they need to fulfill all their obligations and responsibilities.
Yeah, the tasks of their job, yeah.
And where Working Girl gets it wrong and is such a sign of its time is that that's what all Melanie Griffith does is conform herself to the patriarchy, including the part where women are undercutting other women.
Yeah.
I mean, that's her whole thing. And Sigourney Weaver's too. It's like, she's not blameless in this either. She is a bougie, everything hated to her person as well. But the main thing is, like, I mean, to me, the line that sums up the ethos of the movie is, I have a head for business and a body for sin.
A body for sin, yeah.
And that's just that hits it. And then, I mean, the relationship between her and Harrison Ford is bad. Like, it's just all bad. And yet, Carly Simon's doing the main song. Mm-hmm. And I know this movie was, I watched a trailer for it too. Like, it is pushed as, oh my God. This movie isn't even for women. It's not. I am thoroughly convinced that Working Girl isn't even made for women. It's made for men. It's made for men to see that woman in the workplace as another one of the boys. There's three tit shots. That's not for women. That's not for. That's not to get women in the seats. That's also not to just like, oh, well, we'll give your boyfriend who you drug to the theater something to sit there for. That's not what that's for either. Like, you've got a woman with a head for business, so you can have a conversation with her without getting frustrated. Mm-hmm. She gets woman brain and a body for sin so that you can objectify her. Like, this movie was so frustrating. Sorry, I'm going too deep. But I don't even think it was made for women.
That's an interesting take. I didn't think about it like that, but you're right. The way the story narrative goes for Working Girl basically supports patriarchal mindsets, right? Like, in order to get the meeting with the big boss, she had to make him feel like she saw him as, you know, like an amazing trendsetter, you know, who's doing all this stuff, right?
She was stroking his ego about the union busting. I got so mad.
And then, you know, like, even in the meeting after, you know, like, everybody there, you know, was told these are her ideas, right? And then this other woman comes in and says, well, they're really my ideas. She's just my secretary, right? the only way that she gets anything is because Harrison Ford steps in, right? And it's just like that, you know, 9 to 5 didn't do that.
No, anything the man that was not, Melanie Griffith got was from a, was at the behest of a man. Didn't matter how much she did.
Yeah.
Well, 9 to 5 is directly the opposite, as they get the man out of the fucking way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, to be fair, when the owner of the company thought that the guy, you know, oh, what was his name? Dabney Coleman. for whatever reason, I kept wanting to call him Larry Hagman from, that's JR and, from Dallas and I Dream of Jeannie.
Oh, okay.
But it's Dabney Coleman was the guy who was the vice president of the company. And when he came in thinking that the guy had done all these things, right? Like, he never finds out that the women did it. Mm-hmm. He just assumes that the guy came up with the ideas and the women are perpetuating it. And so, like, it'll be, it would be interesting to see the after effects of that. Well, you know, like, what was going on with the company.
The interesting thing is like, they were all, it was a middleman deal. The whole point of Working Girl was that Harrison Ford had made some bad investments, and he was on his last chance to be able to bring something to his investment company and bring it to the investor. That was the old man that they're trying to get to buy the family owned radio stations. So like they weren't buying the radio station themselves. They weren't selling the radio station themselves. The entire point of the plot is for them to get a cut of something they have nothing to do with. Right. The rich guy had been wanting to get into media. TV was getting to be too expensive. So Melanie Griffith's big idea is you should do radio, because she reads all these different publications and joined the dots. That's her beautiful mind genius.
That's her beautiful mind genius. Yeah.
That evidently was so lucrative, Sigourney Weaver had to steal.
Yeah.
And so it's about her meeting Harrison Ford and putting together the deal to present to the investor, and then them bringing the investor together with the family-owned radio station.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is also getting, I mean, this is 90s corporate witch shit, but like, it's also a story about the consolidation of radio and media, which is not something that has helped this country. So it's just, it's all bad. It's all, there's nothing good. There's nothing to root for. And then her reward is just a random fucking office in the middle of a big ass fucking skyscraper. Just like every other schlub in the city, who's, as Harrison Ford put it, one deal away from fucking themselves. So it's like, that's not a happy ending. Oh, man. We're stuck on Working Girl, so you just want to start with Working Girl?
Well, I mean, like, even the ending, right? Where, like, how does she not understand that she gets the office?
Yeah, that was weird. She walks in, and her secretary is sitting at her desk, and she meekly sits down at the secretary's desk, and then the secretary comes out and she's like, oh, this is your office. And she's like, really? Office? It's like,
so I mean, okay, so 88, I would have been 12, I think.
I would have been 7.
Oh god. Anyway, I would have been 12, I think. I'm trying to, like, when I was watching it, I was trying to figure out if I would have felt the way this movie is supposed to make me feel.
Yeah.
So like, it's how it's supposed to make you feel is she overcomes all these things, her boyfriend cheating on her that she thought would be with her, her boss betraying her, you know, whatever, to get to the point where she wanted to be, right? You know, and we're supposed to like root for her and be so excited and be happy with her that she is no longer the secretary. She's in the big office. Right. And like that, I didn't feel any of that. Like I hated how they did the scene with the, I wish I could, I wish my tongue would talk well.
It's over your brain.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, break. I especially hated the scene where she goes to her best friend's engagement party and is forced to kind of be with her boyfriend that cheated on her. And then he asks her to marry her in that time. Working,
a very not working class looking Alec Baldwin.
Yes.
This guy's supposed to be on Staten Island, bought his first, his own fishing boat, and I still don't buy it.
Not 1 second. Not 1 second of it. Look at his hands. I can tell by how they look in the grainy picture from 1988 that he doesn't work with fishing lines.
His hair slicked back. He's got the fashionable 5 o'clock shadow. Collar pops. I think he even had the rolled up the Miami Vice sleeves on his sports coat. Like, he just... He puts no effort into any kind of accent. No. So it's like, hey, Melon. I'm like, Tess, I got a boat over here. Like, none of that. Like, by the way.
It's the understated Boston accent.
Yeah, no, bullshit. He does not own a boat. A fishing boat. There's no fucking
not one fishing boat.
No.
Exactly. But yeah, so, I mean, I feel like however they went into Working Girl, the, like you said, the concept was not to draw women in. It was only to reinforce the stereotype, and the only way women of a patriarchal stereotype of work, and the only way women can, you know, find success in that patriarchal system is to behave like men themselves.
Exactly.
And that is what that movie was reinforcing onto our social construct, as opposed to giving women a view of how things could be better, which I think 9 to 5 did. Because when I watched that movie, even now, how many issues would be solved if a workplace had a daycare, if a workplace allowed for work sharing, where somebody could work part-time and then leave at the time they need it and somebody else could come
no
in.
Yeah, no set times.
Yeah, or having an alternate work week where they can come in earlier or later depending on their needs and still get the work done based on, you know, their duties. You know, like if you need to open the office, you can't work an alternate schedule. You got to be there at 8 o'clock if the office opens at 8 for the general public. But, like, other than that, how you do your work, what you do with your work, all of that stuff being controlled by the employee, you know, at the needs of the employer, but, you know, being in the hands of the employee, I think is a really good idea. We're just now getting to the fact that we don't need to be in an office to do our work. I've known that for 20 years. Just based on when I was able to work from home and, you know, like do anything. I mean, like talking to people, where most of my job is writing and desk work, like, literally, why do I have to be in a specific place? You know? And I get it, you know, working with people and having co-workers that support each other and things like that are important. I really enjoy going into the office at my current job. I did not enjoy going into the office at my previous job because no one was in the office, or if they were in the office, we spent way too much time talking. You know,
we don't need to paint a big brush for everyone that no one has to go into work, because there are people who are like, well, what about the socializing and blah, blah, blah. And my dad, you know, he enjoys not having to drive, but he says all the time that he hates, because they've basically, like, he works at an Air Force base. And they're basically just like, actually, we're getting a lot more done with everyone staying home. And so for him, requesting certain items from people, it can be cumbersome online, but he doesn't have to get up and drive. So I think
that saves so much money. Gas saves so much money. Not driving, I mean.
One of the reasons why it's raising in price, but they, no, like 9 to 5 takes control of the workplace and molds it to their needs while still accomplishing the goals and expectations of the business. I mean, I think the VP comes in and states specifically, like, your numbers are all high. Like, you're doing
productivity
better
is up, like, you know, 15 or 20%, which is a lot.
Mm-hmm. But with Working Girl, again, let's finish that ending. She brings this deal. She becomes a middleman with Harrison Ford. So I guess they get a cut. And then Sigourney Weaver shows up and blows up, you know, the cover story that Melanie Griffith has, that she's important enough. I mean, that's really what it is. She uses Sigourney Weaver's position to be allowed in the room to put this deal together. There's so much lack of meritocracy being a movie that I'm sure Hillary Clinton campaigners watched on repeat because it made them feel so good about themselves. Like, just that type of, like, I really need to know what wave feminism this is so I can say it correctly. But the movie's so finishing my thoughts. She puts together the deal. Sigourney Weaver blows up her spot, but she still wins, quote unquote, in the end, because basically the old man, the rich man, was impressed with her idea so much he hires her to be an idea person for him in house. So that's, she now gets the job that she was pretending to have with Sigourney Weaver's company, but now she has it for real at his. But her job is what? To just keep on finding new creative ways to make this asshole richer.
Well, yeah,
basically. Like, that's the prize.
Sigourney Weaver is in the same company. They're in the same company.
I don't think so. These are all
mergers companies. And acquisitions for Consolidated. Yeah.
Is okay. Oh, it was their company that it was.
I mean,
his.
Not
okay.
Consolidated.
She was in Mergers and Acquisitions, but I thought they were. I thought all these companies were independent of one another. The reason why they went to him was because he was looking for something, not because they worked for him. I thought
that they went to him because they worked for him, but maybe not.
Anyway, the point is still what's the prize? I mean, the prize for 9 to 5 is their job, their lives got easier while they still performed their tasks. I mean, don't get me wrong, 9 to 5 is not like, you know, some socialist revolution, other than the workers ran the work, the means of production. They didn't own them. So it was close, but not it. Awesome. Oh, the insidious part, the another insidious part about Working Girl is the faux feminism that it puts in with Joan Cusack's character, because Joan Cusack is the traditional, the traditional trajectory. She's getting married. She's going to be the homemaker. She's her future husband's going to be the breadwinner. She's going to take care of him. She's going to be his support.
Right.
And that's what Alec Baldwin wants Melanie Griffith to do for him, and it's her refusing that so that she can go her own way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has that, that's the faux feminism in it. That's the, like, oh, I'm not going to be held down by no man. I'm going to be just as productive for the capitalist machine as he is. And so, because And that really is just all her job is, and all she's trying to do is make someone else money. It's one thing to work at a widget factory where I'm making widgets, and the widgets just happen to make money for the boss. It's another thing. Her job is to, like, look under couch cushions to find this motherfucker some money. It's so direct. I think it's the difference between watching a movie with it, like, having a materialist mindset and looking at, like, wait a minute, What is the plot of this fucking movie? What is she doing? As opposed to the vibes. Like, I think the reason this movie gets away with what it does because it's just vibes.
Well, I mean, I spent the whole time just looking at their hair. Like, did we really have our hair like that in the 80s?
Especially Joan Cusack, Jesus.
Oh my God. Like, I didn't even recognize her as Joan Cusack.
Yeah.
Because of her hair.
Ever seen her hair that high or makeup that thick? Not even in Toys.
But yeah, I mean, like, it's kind of like, it was weird watching Melanie Griffith not have support the way she needed it from the people around her, right?
She had no support system.
So Joan Cusack's character, Sin, was just like, why don't you get back with Adam Baldwin? Whatever his...
Alec.
Alec Baldwin, whatever his character is called.
Duggan. Oh my God, they were trying to give him the most working doc's name, and it still didn't work.
Yeah, Mick did not care about... Like, he was like... The first thing he says to her when she walks in on him with the woman is...
Yeah.
So no class today?
Bruh. No responsibility for any of his decisions. Just... What? I mean, like, I'm a man, and so I can only speak from that perspective so much, but, like, what in this movie is attractive for women?
Yeah.
I you know, like, putting
so the expectation from all her friends was she was going to get back together with Mick, Alec Baldwin's character. The expectation from work was that she found out was that her boss was going to say the right words to make her feel, you know, like included. But like, she told her that the idea wasn't a good one. Then when she breaks her leg, when Sigourney Weaver's character breaks her leg and Tess McGill goes to her house to house sit and look after stuff, she finds a thing where it's like, I'm going to use this idea. Don't send anything through Tess because she can't know that I did this, right? Because not then she would know that I really am not there and she won't give me any good ideas to grow my career, you know? And so it's just like, she's basically surrounded by people who are unsupportive, who don't have any of the mindset that you are supposed to have. I mean, but in the 80s, that's how
hyper individualism,
female relationships, this was the expectation, right? So like, it's no surprise that a lot of us, you know, like in our 40s now as women, grew up believing that we couldn't have women friends. Because this is what pop culture made us think women relationships were, right? So, like, we're trying to find the guy that's going to take care of us, right? Because remember, Joan Cusack's character says, he's not going to save you. You know, like, Harrison Ford's character is not going to save her. Like, you're putting your eggs in that basket. But, you know, of course, we all know that they're going to get together in the end of this movie. Like, it's... written all over everybody's face, and it's a movie from the get go, right? So, you know, it's just like nothing in there is anything that I would want for myself as a woman in the workplace. I need supportive people who are actually supportive. I need people who believe that, you know, like where I'm trying to go is a place that I can get to. I get that. Sometimes when you're starting out and you are climbing a corporate ladder or whatever, you know, like you are going to be undervalued and underpaid. But as your ideas show that you can do the work, or, you know, like you're, you know, show yourself excelling or succeeding in places where they weren't expecting because you're new, then there is growth from there. And if that is how the workplace could work for everyone, then we would have less of the recruitment and retention issues that we're seeing in the world today. Like, people just don't want to work. No, people fucking want to work. They just don't want to work for what you're paying them.
Well, the retention is also on the company's fault too. They don't want you to be there forever because that doesn't work out. Like, they don't want to pay out a pension if you can find one. They don't want to pay out
if they have a pension,
seniority benefits or wages.
Yeah. I mean, and so people are trying to find ways to get rid of them because they feel like, oh, this is a drain on our resources. But in reality, if they keep the pension system, then they spend less money than if they do, like, everybody that's wanting to do a 401k. Because the possibility of making more money than what you would get from your pension exists. But what you have to do to get there, no one can tell you, right? There's no way to make the stock market work for you in a way that will give you millions of dollars by the time you retire versus your, you know, possible $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 that you might be making consistently with a pension, right?
401k is a scam, and it's been proven to not be what it was supposed to. It was not, it has ended up not being what it was sold to be. And of course it wasn't. It was just a way to get you, get working people invested in the stock market, and you get open up a new market for more investment by pooling, right, getting working people to pull together in, you know, in companies like Vanguard to invest where they wouldn't have access to. It's just,
right,
a fucking scam. But
I mean, we know what they're trying to do. We see it all. We have it, but like, no one's willing to not have a job anymore to fight, I mean, yeah, back, like, against it. So yeah, what are we going to do? Right.
Yeah. What do you got to do? What you got to do with what you're given to do it with? I want to go back and stay with the competition thing. Again, this is something you're going to have more experience and perspective with than I am, but I feel like you hear all the time how women are super competitive with each other at work, and it's said as if it's some kind of, like, you know, fact of nature. Like, women just are going to backbite each other. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying that they can't. Like, everybody, every group has infighting. But you look at 9 to 5, they found a way to ever for everyone to excel without there, right, having to be this competition. Where Sigourney, right, Weaver, even though she was handed that position, if Melanie Griffith shows her up, now her position is precarious.
Right.
So that creates the competition.
Right. But that's how the workforce was, even more so back then. And still is technically today, you know? I mean, just like thinking about, you know, hiring or whatever, right? And like, when you have trained someone else to do the work that you do, and they get the job over you without having the same depth of knowledge. And it's like, okay, not that they're not good and can't do their job, you know, nothing like that. But like, when you don't get hired consistently for stuff, because competitively people feel like, oh, so what did Dabney Coleman say? He had to hire the guy because he thinks a white guy needs to do the job. Well, I don't know if he said white guy. A guy needs to do the job is what he said. So he didn't hire Lily Tomlin's character.
Mm-hmm. Or no, didn't promote her? Wasn't that her?
Yeah, promote her to a different position. Hire her to a different, yeah, position is what I was talking about. But yeah, so he promoted a dude that she trained.
Yep.
Who doesn't know as much as she does, because he felt like a dude needed to be there. But, you know, like, that's what people of color get when they need somebody white, or, you know, or they feel like they need somebody white because white people have more authority than people of color. Or when they, you know, want a white dude as opposed to a black dude, or they take a black dude over any other woman of color because they need the quota. They need to meet the quota, but they don't want to do it with women.
For all the bitching by the right wing of, what's it called? Oh, fuck. I always forget the name of it. You know, where you're like, try to give, their characteristic of it is you would give special treatment and hire a black guy over a white guy. Affirmative action.
Oh, affirmative action, yeah.
They bitch about affirmative action, but if you look at the studies and it's white women who have gotten more out of affirmative action than any other demographic. Yeah. So I've heard so many of these stories of white guys bitching and moaning that a black guy got hired over who they think over a white guy, or they can't fire the black guy because then they'd lose their quota system. I've heard that so much throughout my fucking life. And then when you look at the numbers, it's white women who have benefited the most benefited from this stuff.
Yeah.
It's so fucking annoying.
And it's annoying because the complaint about people of color being hired due to affirmative action or minority quotas, or, I mean, like, even the state of Alaska has, where you get specific points depending on where you're trying to work, right? We have an area where we don't have a lot of women, or we don't have a lot of native people or things like that. So if your application indicates that you're native because you decided to give that information, then you get a few extra points for being native. You get extra points for being military. You get extra points for, you know, like a variety of things that adds to how they do, how they
assess,
calculate, the, yeah, process your application to move to the next stages. And so it's just interesting knowing that those biases exist, but the reason that workplaces have to do things like this is because they don't do it on their own. You know, we've fallen for the narrative that, you know, only white people can do most of these things, and really only white men. And even in these stories that are being told, you know, like with people going into the workforce, like the Atlantic article was talking about the movement from working, from being home makers to the workforce, but it even admits that it did not account for all of the work that women did in the home. But it wasn't even talking about like just being wives in the home. They were talking about the move from agriculture to industrial, and how women's work on a farm wasn't even being accounted for when doing the statistics of moving from home to employment. So, you know, like the concept of being the person that keeps your finances in order, being the person that educates your children and keeps them together and, you know, it informs them and helps them grow and cares for them and all of that stuff, makes dinner and keeps the house clean and all that stuff, isn't considered work and still isn't considered work in a way that can carry over from being a homemaker to the workforce.
Yeah, leftist theory, of course, a lot of feminist theory talks about, I think it's called social work because it helps society. I'm not sure. It's like a thing that I've wanted to get into, but I just haven't gotten there yet. But as far back as Lenin has talked about that type of shit, about how housework is unpaid work. Like, it's still work. It has to get done. And that it's supportive work, but it's if you didn't have that work, you wouldn't get to the job.
Right.
Like, you'd be in dirty clothes. You'd be
dirty clothes, unwashed, unfed.
Unfed and all that. And so there's a support part to that. And that's how we think of it, me and Stephanie. Like, she doesn't think about it as money she makes, but that we make, because if I didn't keep the house clean or feed her or go grocery shopping or do the stuff that needed to be done at the house, then she wouldn't be able to do her job.
Right.
And that was even before we got into like leftist thought and thinking in those ways.
Yeah.
Another.
Yeah, I mean, same for us too. You know, like we have considered ourselves a team since we've been together. Like, when we got married, we were not pronounced man and wife. We were pronounced. And so that is one of the ways that we, you know, keep that going for us, because it's not my money, his money, you know, it's our money. And, you know, like the things that we do outside of, I mean, even though like it's separate accounts still and all that stuff.
People, look, do whatever you want. I'm not judging. I don't care. It doesn't have anything to do with me. But when I've been presented with this idea of like, oh, it's my money and his money or whatever, our money's separate, I'm like, no, it's not. It's one pot. Like, my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law, Stephanie's sister and her husband, said they were going to keep stuff separate like that, and she would still cover some bills, and he'd cover the big ones because he's a banker, and she was a social worker. But I'm like, so if she can't cover the cable bill, you're just gonna let her starve? Like,
right.
It's one pot. Like, you label, you want to,
even
put
if it's
labels,
separate accounts, it's still one pot, because it's caring for everything that you're doing, and it's going to be cared for whether one person can handle that their part of it or not.
And I understand that there are people who have broken up over money, and it's one person spending more than they should. My answer to that has always been, that is a symptom, not the problem. Like, when you're putting yourself over our resource, putting yourself over a priority of our resources. That's a larger mm-hmm. problem than just
right. You're spending money,
too much money. Yeah. Like, so, right. But like, again, people do whatever you want. I'm just explaining how I think of it and how I've seen it. And I'll admit, as the not breadwinner, it's a convenient way of looking at things. I understand that. But like I said, you can break it up however you want. You can divide the bills however you want. But if they don't pay for something, you're not going to let them starve. So if you're not, right. then it's one pot. Right. It might have 7 compartments in it, but it's one pot. Right. One of the yeah. things that another insidious thing that I'm remembering about Working Girl too was the scene with the secretary pole, where they put together some money for her when she was moving out of that job. We never saw her talk to them. We never saw her interact with them, call them, meet them for a drink. Like, that was such performative bullshit. She never thought about them. She didn't. And again, this is part of the problem with the Reagan Revolution. She didn't see her as part of the group. She wasn't right. one of the secretaries moving up. And I'm moving up for all of us. You know, the Eugene Debs quote, I don't want to rise from the ranks, but with the ranks. She does right. not have that. Mentality whatsoever. She don't give a mm-hmm. fuck about them. And that's what we've done to ourselves. We're not workers, we're consumers. And that's a very yeah. independent thing. And it's not, for all the fucking, you know, boycotts that people try,
there's nothing individual. There's really nothing you can do if you're, you know, in this culture. I mean, like, really and truly, even if you're not a consumer, like, if you try not to be a consumer, you're still in it. You know, there's no ethical consumption. Like, there's nothing that we could point to or go to where that we can do without that is done ethically.
Well, what I'm talking
that
about
is not done ethically.
I'm talking about the class consciousness and identity. Identifying portion of it. Like, we don't identify ourselves anymore as a working class that is in struggle with the owner class. We think of ourselves as individual consumers in a marketplace. And
yeah.
any collective action that even comes into our brains. I mean, look at the right wing all the time with the fucking Bud Light and the Keurigs and the whatever the fuck.
And the Nike shoes that they bought and then were destroying.
They literally buy, they don't even know how to do a boycott. They buy shit to destroy it, and they think, what did you do? You just increased right. your profit, dumbass. No, so it's like, we're not, I think that's one of the biggest hurdles of leftist organizing, is getting us to remember that we are, like, our position in the economy is not part of the marketplace, but that's where people are so disillusioned with electoral politics, and so that's why I'll vote with my dollar then, because I don't mm-hmm. even think my vote does anything. Like,
right.
we're just constantly told how much the system can't work from us, but the only part of the system that we see and we know they won't let disappear is the market. And so if we make choices within the marketplace by our consumption habits, then that says something, not only says something about who we are, but also will have some kind of material effect somewhere, we think.
Right.
But when everything's, you know, just like with the Bud Light bullshit, it's like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, only 2 companies own all the beverages, right? Like, oh, you're going to drink Coors Light? Good job. InBev still owns them. Like, yeah. what are you doing? And I think that's
so that's
sad.
Why InBev can make a stand with one of their beers, right?
Yes. Yes. So that's why the press, the secretary pool things was just so gross. Cause that's what I realized in real time. I was like, where the fuck are these ladies? But like, I wish this was real, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas again, 9 to 5, you had your main women, but mm-hmm. they still looked out for the entire floor or department right. or whatever.
Right.
Probably the worst part of 9 to 5 is Jane Fonda not being able to run the copier.
I love that her thing was that she married the copy repair guy.
Yeah, again, yeah, sort of undercut just a little bit, but the rest of the movie's so good, I'm just gonna let it go.
But yeah, no, 9 to 5 was, I really enjoyed 9 to 5. I love Lily Tomlin's wry sense of humor. Mm-hmm. Dolly Parton was just a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And Jane Fonda, like you said, Lily Tomlin's character and Dolly Parton's character would definitely have been in, you know, like a writer's head if they're trying to come up with this movie, right? You know, because that's definitely what we're dealing with, right? Sexual harassment and doing a lot of work to show that you're worth the promotion, but never getting the promotion. Mm-hmm. But like being new into the workforce and, you know, like at an older age, so she's not, you know, getting chased around the desk. She's not getting the job because she is attractive and the boss wants to get to know her. She's getting the job because, you know, like somebody wants to help the poor woman out, right? Even like the anger and that she gets when they come into the copy room and she's got all those papers everywhere, you know, like, you've definitely seen it where the girl was cute and innocent looking, and they would not have gotten quite the same response as the Jane Fonda's character gets. Because she technically is supposed to be like an old divorcee in this. And this is like, despite the fact that she's very young looking, I mean, yeah, you know, hair notwithstanding, and considerably attractive, you know, so. I don't know, it was just funny watching that happen. But
this is only a difference, too, of like you said, 8 years. So,
yeah,
that means, I mean, and this was written, you know, 95, you know, probably written in 78, 79.
Yeah.
Like we always try to remind people, like, it's not the year it came out that it was made.
Right. Exactly.
I was listening to a podcast about Man on Fire and they were talking about 2004 when this movie came out. We were blah, blah, blah. I was like, but that's not when this was made. It was made in 2003. Anyway, I think it really does show you, you know, again, everybody, it's the Reagan Revolution. I've been saying the Reagan Revolution, but it was midwifed with Carter. And that's why it's such mm-hmm. a strange, that's why it's such an abrupt change. When the narrative is, oh, this is all Reagan's fault, that's why it feels like this abrupt change. Like, what fucking happened between 1980 and 1981 when 80. We just like, when we made movies like Blue Collar and we said everything fucking sucks.
Right.
That's why you have to also take into account into to the story about this was also midwifed by people like Carter. Right. Nixon, of course, also had a hand in getting more and more comfortable with corporate donors and hand in glove with the state. Not that that wasn't going on from the fucking beginning. Right. It got worse and worse, just deteriorating, got closer and closer over time. But it's so sad because, again, I can't remember all the policies they instituted that they went over, but every single one, as he was listing, I was like, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. We should be. And again, like you said, this came out in 1980 and we still haven't implemented some of these ideas.
Right.
I do think some companies started doing daycares between now and then, but it's not, mm-hmm. I was watching Deep Impact and mm-hmm. they had a daycare in their corporate media office. So I know it existed in some places. I don't know that I didn't work in any of those places.
No, I never worked at a place that had a daycare.
I mean, to be fair, both of these movies deal with PMC jobs, professional managerial class jobs.
Right.
No one's working in a dock or sling.
It took me forever to get to the desk office job, you know, but once I was there, when I stopped having to work for retail and standing all day, I was just like, yeah, this is for me. I mean, notwithstanding car accident that made it difficult to stand on a regular basis, but you know, that exists. But just thinking about these concepts and ideas that would be good and how we move from how can the workplace be better for everyone? Because it didn't just help women, you know.
Just because 9 to 5 didn't adhere to the patriarchy doesn't mean they turned it into a matriarchy.
Right.
Like we remind people all the time, feminism is not about female superiority. It's about equality. And because there's a just like Black Lives Matter, it's not just that Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter is all lives matter. But because there's a deficiency in this area, that's why it's called, put in the moniker. But
right.
But it's liberatory for everyone.
Right. Right. What's the Eugene... Wait, is it, or is it God? Whatever you do for the least of these. I don't know. Like, I feel like there is a quote by Eugene Debs that talks about whatever you do for caring for the smallest group cares for everyone. You know, I mean, we have a bunch of different quotes, like all the, you know, the rising tide raises all ships, you know, like the little things that happen for people who aren't you will sometimes still benefit you if mm-hmm. you give it a chance to do so, right? Chris was telling me, like, different people have gotten shot over the past few weeks. You know, there was the kid that went to the wrong door because he was on terrace in that accident. Street. Right, yep. There was somebody who pulled into the driveway of a car of somebody's house. I don't know if it was to turn around or whatever. They got shot or whatever. So then I was just like, were all of the people who were shot black? And it was like, no, they were not.
White cheerleader.
Right. And so, like, all these different things that are happening, he named three, and only one of the shot people were black. And yeah. It was just like, well, that's a shame, because we've basically gotten to the point now where people feel like they can raise arms against just random strangers. Like, when we were in Hawaii, Chris got motion seasick. We went on a 6-hour cruise. He was seasick the entire time. And so he also gets car sick, but it's usually not bad because, you know, like we live in Juneau. We're not really going that far. And on the drive back, which was approximately a 30-minute drive, from where we were to where we were going, he started getting sick again. And so we pulled into, I don't even know where we pulled into, but it was a driveway off of the main thoroughfare. The main thoroughfare was being worked on. It was a place where I felt like we could get in and get out in a safe manner, and that with plenty of room for him to hurl if he needed to. And, you know, obviously, like, you pull into somebody's yard or whatever, they're going to be like, what the fuck, you know, who's out there? But, like, there has never been an expectation that somebody's going to pull out their gun and just start shooting at whoever's in their driveway. Because people pull into driveways for a variety of reasons, hardly any of which is to rob you. So, you know, if we cared for all these black and brown bodies that are being killed or murdered or whatever, we would also still be caring for all the white people who are murdered and killed. If there were repercussions for doing shitty stuff to black people, then those repercussions would be there for all the white people who are, you know, falling prey to it now because we've made it seem okay to do shit like that. And so, you know, the media we're watching, right? When we have ways that we know these things can be corrected and made better, we've made fucking movies about it. 9 to 5 shows you how you can have a better workplace that helps everybody. And then we move on to the female empowerment that is Working Girl, which is the least female empowering of the two movies in general. Even though the women don't get their due from the men, they knew what they did, and that's all they needed. Because they did that work. They didn't get in trouble for keeping Dabney Coleman locked up, which is hilarious to me. They didn't get in trouble for any of that. And they still got rid of him because they made him look so good. The boss needed him somewhere else, right? And because my assumption is because he sung her praises so much with this work that he was doing, she's probably going to take over that office now because she can continue his work since she knew so much about it in the first place. And that is something that he wasn't expecting from this chaos that was going on. And the fact that it was more productive. I mean, like, there were literally, like, even now, there are people who are working from home who legitimately aren't doing anything. Like, they're getting online, they're playing video games, they're, you know, like, whatever, right? More power to them. Because if they can keep their job somehow and still do all that shit, then they should. I think they should be able to. Who cares? Because all we need is the work to be done, right? If the work is getting done, what the fuck do you care what I'm doing in the meantime, right? And if you want to give me more work, then give me more work and I'll do that more work. But, like, I might still take my 15-minute break and play a video game that might last 30 minutes, you know? But does it matter? Because the work is getting done.
Work times, I think, are stupid. Like, just give me a list of things that you need done with a job that can do that, which is most PMC jobs, office jobs. They know how much they want you to get done at a certain time, or maybe you answer a call or whatever. I'm just saying, like, there's a lot of work that doesn't have to get done between 9 to 5. It can be done anywhere. So at the end of the week, as long as you've gotten all the productivity that you asked for, that you paid for through my wages, instead of trying to milk as much as possible,
right?
Who fucking gives a shit if I do it at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Right.
There's a book that I've been meaning to read, and it's supposed to be really good. And it talks about, it's called Bullshit Jobs, and it's written by David Graeber, who's everything I've gotten from him is really cool. He talks about how, like, debt is control and that stuff. And he's since died, but people should check out if people are interested, they should check out a book, Bullshit Jobs.
So that's one I want to get, because it was talking about, like, HR is a bullshit job, which is one of the jobs that I have. And, like, even, like, what I do now is kind of a bullshit job, but it's also somewhat necessary, because the employer is not going to do they're not going to do right by their employees if they don't have somebody kind of forcing them to, which we see, you know, like, and the force is either, you know, it's coming because we have a negotiated contract and the union is forcing you, or we have recruitment and retention issues. So now you've got to do these things in order to get people in, or especially if you want good people, you've got to pay more, you've got to give benefits, you've got to have. So, like, employers are being forced to do some things that they don't want to do and they don't like it, obviously, but it's what they got to do right now in order to get the workforce in, because they're dealing with losing boomers who were huge. They're dealing with the Gen X group and a millennial group that are approximately the same size, you know, of the population. I think both are approximately 24% of the population, right? Like, maybe together they're a force to be reckoned with, but individually they're just a small group of people. So they don't get the same control and the same kind of concepts of in the work environment as, like, the boomer generation does. And then the generation under millennials, they're as big as the boomers were. Like, people had a shit ton of kids, like, that would now be my grandchildren, apparently. You know, like, I don't know. I would have given birth to a millennial. Nope, millennials are born in the 80s. I would have given birth to Gen Z. Is that what we're looking at next?
Yeah,
Zoomers. The Zoomers?
Yeah. To more on the bullshit job thing. The reason why we have so many bullshit jobs, because we need jobs. I mean, you hear all this talk. Turn on MSNBC, read Forbes, and whatever they prioritize the opposite. So they're going to tell you we really need to pay attention to job creators, because it's the businessmen that create the businesses that employ the people. Except, when do you hire people? Do you hire people when you have less, zero, or more demand? You hire people when you have demand. So demand is what actually makes our economy go. It's about 70% of how an economy runs. Mm-hmm. And so if we only employed people that we needed to make the system sort of work, we would have so much higher employment. And so we do create these bullshit jobs. I'm not talking about one company here. I'm talking about the system. This society is the system taking up itself. And I'm not talking about, so, and also too, for you new listeners, when I say the system, it doesn't have, these things are self-correcting. They're built into the system. Because if you don't have enough demand, because you don't have enough people working, the system will find a way through its markets to fill that hole it needs to keep it going. Or it'll get a subsidy.
Right.
So it has its hand out. So like the Keynesian economic theory will tell you that if you need to, you will hire people to dig holes and fill them up again, because you need people to have money to purchase the goods that you're buying, that you're building, so that you can increase the wealth at the top. If you don't, I mean, that's the huge contradiction of capitalism, which is why we call this era late stage capitalism, is we have we're raising the prices so much and we're lowering the wages so much that you're not having, people aren't able to afford the products that keep the economy spinning. Right. And if you do that too much, then it just stops because no one can buy anything.
Right. And then or what they do is, you know, like do kind of a petty raise kind of thing, but they also lower the access to credit.
Yes.
So that debt being a jailer, what'd you say? Debt is a control. Debt is control.
Debt is control. It's like if the bank, if you have debt, if I owe you money, then I have a harder time telling you no when you ask me to do something.
Right.
I mean, that's just on an interpersonal level. Now I owe the bank my house.
Right.
So if my bank wants me to do something, I have no, and property ownership is the main driving force of our laws, then I am coerced over at every turn to do whatever the bank requires me to do, like have a shitty job. Which, and that's what I'm talking about when I say the system. No, Jamie Dimon didn't make you get a shitty job, but Citibank gave you a bill which requires you to go get a job that probably Jamie Dimon has an investment in to make the money. You know, see, this is how, so when we say, like, when we talk about things on a system level, we're not creating a boogeyman. We're not being conspiratorial, but these are systems. These are incentives that parallel with each other to create the system that puts us in these positions.
Right.
I feel like I have to spoil this out for some people because I needed it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, first of all, like, we start ostensibly talking about 9 to 5 and working girl as, you know, the performance of these social constructs that we see on a regular basis. But like, we also are talking about, you know, like, these things in the workforce that, like, not a lot of people will agree with us. Some people believe that we do have to work. And I don't believe that we have to work. Not everybody. I believe some people will want to work. I believe some people will want to do different things. Like, literally during a pandemic where I had nothing to do, I came up with this idea for a podcast so that I was doing something. Partly for me to be creative, partly as a way to make all the TV watching I was doing count for something as opposed to laziness. But still, we come up with the things we want to do that we feel will enrich us, and we have to work. Like, so some people have to work at shitty jobs because they need to pay bills and they need to have food and they need to care for their kids or their families or whatever, right? And there are people who have great, amazing jobs that they love, that, you know, they get to do, and it pays for all their stuff and everything like that, right? But I don't think that everybody should have to work. I feel like there should be room for artists to be artists, and that's where their time and energy goes. And they get a place to live, food to eat, and medical, you know, like, all their needs cared for on a regular basis. And then if they make money doing it, great. If they don't, they're doing their art. But like me, I'd be doing this. Maybe I'd still be doing the work that I'm doing now, as part of my job, if everything else was cared for. But yeah, I don't think our society does us well.
Our society defines work poorly, I think, is the problem when we start talking about work, when we're mm-hmm. when we're talking about work with people outside of the group that's already primed to think about these things, because mm-hmm. they just hear, I don't want to do anything. And that's not true.
Right. Right.
Because art is, I do art for work, and art is work, and it's studying yeah. and it's getting to a point and it's honing. There's a lot of work that goes into doing that stuff that doesn't even produce a picture. Like, I do a lot of studying and inspiration stuff to get me to where I can create output, because right. our society, because capitalism is so much built on production and sale mm. that productivity has to equal those things. So I have to produce right. something to be productive, as opposed to sometimes I don't touch paper for a couple of months because I'm thinking or working.
You're putting
shit.
The ideas together. You're looking at other stuff. You are thinking about like what you're trying to communicate. I mean, there's a lot of creativity that goes, there is a lot of things that goes into the creative pursuits that people have that are not that actual pursuit. You know, I mean, even if it's just, I'm practicing with paint, this is not meant to be yeah. anything. Whether it's, you know, like I'm paying attention to story because I need to understand how to tell a good story, whether it's because I want to be a verbal storyteller, whether it's because I want to be a writer, however that goes. And so when we think about work, I think you're right as far as our concept of work and what constitutes good work is very skewed in our society. And I think that concept is what makes us think Working Girl is a better movie than 9 to 5.
And also to repetition, we say that work has to be hard, work has to be mind numbing, but they've also done studies too on what kind of work people are doing, and the more varied their work is and more targeted it is by giving a project as opposed to being at a bottle factory putting on caps
right.
over and over again, just that right. repetition is way less rewarding than given a project and then having to accomplish that every day. And right. we give the worst of that work, the repetitious work, we give that to the person who probably needs it the least, but needs a paycheck the most.
Right.
And we pay them the least. But, mm-hmm. you know, right-wingers, I know, at least the tribe I come from, like to, they're obsessed with the Wild West. Because they consider mm-hmm. that, like, the government's out of my way. Mm-hmm. I rise or fall based on my merit. So when I think of, like, work and what we need to survive, I almost go back to subsistence farming days.
Right.
When I think about that. And I think about how, like, you've got your plot of land, you've got your house, you get all the fruits of that labor. Whatever you mm-hmm. put into it, you've got it. This is the least exploitative relationship I can think of between just an individual person and their labor. Mm-hmm. You're not doing the same thing every day. You're probably also not necessarily working 12 hours a day on that farm. You're doing the work that needs to get done, and then you have time for other things. And I mm-hmm. think so we've also created this, the Industrial Revolution and wage slavery has created this idea that we have to like be part of an assembly line, and that's also part of work, and that's integral to the definition of work in our current system. And I think that's another part where we corrupt these ideas that we, you know, people like to bring up the naturalization argument. That's not human nature. That's not human nature. As if all of civilization's purpose is to work against human nature. I'm talking on the internet right now. That's not goddamn natural either. But I do think there's a level of human nature that I think we do have to keep up with a little bit. And I think capitalism absolutely works against that because it puts us in these boxes that we can outgrow so easily, and I think we all outgrow them, and there's how that restriction manifests is just different for each of us. It's depression, it could be mm-hmm. violence, it's just anger, don't know why I'm angry,
acceptance
sometimes acceptance, yes, and I think that has a toll on our mental health. not to go too grand, but it's a really bad system, and Working Girl loves it, whereas 9to5 says this is how we can, instead of Working Girl is Melanie Griffith conforming herself to the system, and 9to5 is adjusting the system to them.
Right. And the other thing is, like, the end goal for each of these movies. 9to5's end goal is to care for the office and to make sure that the working environment matches what the employees need so that the work can get done. They're still trying to get the work done.
Exactly.
And Working Girl is about one woman's struggle to overcome the odds and get to the dream job that she wants to have. And I feel like by amping that up more, and like I would feel like the putting those two movies together as part of, you know, like in our minds that they're the same movie. I think that that is something that the people who made Working Girl would enjoy, because it equalizes our mind, our thoughts about Working Girl as a movie to coincide with how we feel about 9to5, even though Working Girl is almost the exact opposite in a lot of ways, because it is about one person's, you know, reach for their successful dream, right? And the movie is trying to say, if she can do it, you know, like a working class girl from New Jersey and whatever, I don't know where she's actually from, but Staten Island. Okay. Yeah. A working class girl from Staten Island, too good for the island girl. No, but a working class girl from Staten Island, if she can do it, you can do it too. You can fulfill your dream and find the guy and go to school at night and, you know, whatever. Here is the pathway for you to get to your goal. She had to do some unconventional things, but she did those unconventional things because that's what was right for her. And that individualization that takes out the good of others for the good of me, I think that Working Girl brings about is just detrimental for how we view work and what we do. I mean, like, not that I think anybody now is going to go back and look at 9to5 and Working Girl and then come away with Working Girl as, you know, like, this is what I want to do in my life. You know, that's not what's going to happen. But the making of Working Girl or Working Girl coming out in 88 is kind of set the precedent for how we wanted to see it. Because, you know, like, even though, like, I'm looking back, what the heck? Hairstyles, shoulder pads, like, her shoulder pads were bigger. Just her shoulder pads were bigger than her. You know, like, they were so big.
Which I got to believe that fad was part of the masculinity project of professional women.
To make them
more masculine.
To fall in line with the patriarchy as opposed to pushing to do things that would better, you know, everyone else, including themselves, right? And like, people don't even think about how bettering stuff for everyone else includes them, you know, like. Because it would be better for you if you didn't have to deal with the patriarchy. It would be better for you if you weren't one bad, wrong concept behind how to make money away from being fired from your job. Like, that would work out better for everybody.
MLK would talk about how racism is bad for white people, too. And I think the problem is that everyone's position is so precarious that when you offer an alternative, even if it sounds like it would also benefit them, it's got to reach a certain threshold for them to give up what they know than to try for what they don't.
Right.
Like, this sucks, but at least I know I'm not dead or on the street.
Right.
So what if I go for your plan and then I end up in a worse position?
Right.
And granted, the problem with that too is that the current system sets the definitions and standards of what's worse and better, because we've talked about before that, there's no ethical consumption under capitalism. So what would ethical consumption look like under an equal system? And we would have less access to things.
Right.
It would under a capitalist definition of good and bad, it would probably look like a worse situation, though in reality, because more people are being benefited, it's actually a better situation.
Right.
And I'm less affected by the harms of that exploitation, because as much as we benefit from them, we are also harmed by them. You like breathing?
Well, like, I mean, and definitely some people more than others, right? Like,
it turns into a zero-sum game is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, like, I just remember, you know, I was in South Africa with Ben, and we were drinking whiskey at the bar, and we met a guy who is not from South Africa, but lived in South Africa for a while under apartheid, and then after apartheid. We were there after apartheid. And so we just got into a conversation, you know, was talking, whatever. And he was just like, you know, financially, South Africa was better during apartheid. And we were just kind of like, we looked at each other, and it's like literally better for who? Because basically, with apartheid gone, those people that benefited from that unequal system no longer benefit. So then they feel the crunch of what everybody else was feeling when they were enacting the apartheid system. So yeah, it does end up being worse for some people, but it gets better for people who it was terrible for. You know, so, oh, you don't make as much money as you made now that the apartheid system has gone away. And I get that that sucks for you. But like, now people aren't illegal. Now people can be with whom they want to be with. Now it's not against the law for movement across the country, you know, in what would have been your homeland if, you know, like, fucking Dutch hadn't come.
Equal,
I mean, you know, it's just like, huh?
Equal citizenship.
And yeah. The rights and, the rights thereof. Exactly. And so, like, not that things got significantly better either, because the sharing of wealth didn't happen. Like it no, should have, white but people
did steal the lot
held
of the
on
money
to their shit. Did. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
Shock Doctrine to learn more about that. Go on.
But at the same time, it is a better system because less people are disadvantaged under it. Yeah. But like, if you have a capitalist system, it's built on specific people having to be disadvantaged, which is why we have a pipeline to prison, you know, system from school to prison pipeline, because these people have to be lesser than, or, you know, put in jail, or, you know, constantly talked about as if they are, you know, fully negative. I mean, like, a kindergarten getting into a fight with other kids shouldn't force, you know, like, they shouldn't call the police on a child getting into a fight, or a child having a mental breakdown in a classroom where they're fighting everybody, you know, like, deal with these issues that people have. But like, calling the police, already setting them up to consider themselves bad. So if you think I'm bad, I might as well be bad. You know, I mean, like, give me a fucking break. Right. But, and, you know, like, the rate at which Black girls and Black boys are suspended and in schools under third grade versus white students is ridiculous. But that's what's happening, because they criminalize any behavior for people of color that they don't do for white people. And so, you know, like, we're looking at this stuff in society, and it makes it harder to see how we can get out of the system that's there. And so it's easier for me to just go to work, earn my retirement, and, you know, well, go home at the end of the day. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, it's interesting that we're talking about, like, working people and these two movies and the work environment on May 1st.
Oh,
workers
yes.
of the world should unite.
Yeah. I mean, that right there is its own segment about why I didn't know it was May Day. there's a story why I didn't know it was May Day. Yeah. It's not just, so I do want to clarify something, because I talked about bullshit jobs and how we don't actually need all the jobs. That doesn't mean that the jobs that we do need are being filled, because they're usually not, because we undervalue them. While we're paying Melanie Griffith and Harrison Ford all this money to help consolidate the media landscape. Meanwhile, cleaning landscapes, actual landscapes, is so devalued that we use slavery, aka prison labor, to accomplish that. And when you try to question that part of the system, from Kamala Harris when she was AG at San Francisco to AG of California, all the way to a sheriff in Arkansas. I remember seeing his press conference as well, where people said, why are you, they were keeping people in jail longer because they couldn't afford to pay people to do the work that the prison labor was doing. So people's freedom was being withheld longer because we weren't, the system doesn't fill the holes that it actually needs through the markets.
Right.
That's where it has to force things to happen. And it has no, and you never hear anything about free markets when it comes to coercing more labor out of workers. In fact, I always find it funny how I have to constantly remind people how business works when it comes to wages. Because you'll talk about, we need to raise minimum wage to a livable wage. And even we'll say, we'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Good faith actors will say, what about small businesses? They can't afford to pay those wages. And my answer is always, then they don't get to have a business.
Right.
If you have a pizza shop and you can't afford dough, then you don't get to have a pizza shop.
Yeah.
You don't. Why is it that we look at labor as something that can be a price that can be manipulated way easier than any of the other overhead used to create the, make the business work? For some reason, if you ask for a livable wage from a small business owner, you're the fucking asshole.
Right.
Not the small business owner can't afford to run his fucking business. He can't do capitalism correctly.
Right.
Or else he'd pay for his shit. Yeah. He's not the asshole because he's a job creator. But you're the asshole because you actually want to pay your bills and maybe every once in a while go to McDonald's.
Or do a fun thing, or also travel. And like, you know, when I was back in Georgia, I looked at my finances and I realized I worked and I could pay my bills and go out, or I could pay my bills and travel, but I couldn't do both. And it's just like, what kind of world are we living in where people aren't able to do both? Like, it is exactly formative and good to be able to travel and take vacations with your family. And not everybody can do that. Like, there are people who've never gone on family vacations because they just never have been able to afford it, whether it was the time or whether it was the money.
How helpful is that to a system who constantly tells you you can't afford Medicare for all when you can't go to other countries to see how it works?
Right.
How beneficial is that to our system that us not being able to see how anybody else lives, we're able to just assume this is helpful to assume this is the default. Again, not a smoke-filled room.
Or this is the best way to do stuff.
Yeah. Again, not a smoke-filled room. Just saying this is how the system can protect itself. These are perks.
Yeah.
When it's not intended to help everyone and it's only intended to help the few, then it just so happens to just keep working out that way.
Dang.
When you have those same elitist interests in the 18th century put together a constitution, it somehow just keeps working for that class of people overall.
Just
it's
so weird.
Really funny how that works. Despite our constitution coming down from God, written on stone tablets, and our founding fathers being the equivalent of the apostles, we still ended up this way. It's real crazy.
Yeah, real crazy.
Just getting to the entertainment value of these movies, which I think Working Girl also is just the worst. 9 to 5, again, talk about a movie I was not expecting. I was not expecting a pot circle. I was not expecting cartoon birds. I was not expecting the surreal aspects to it through the flashbacks and dream things.
Yeah.
I didn't even expect how far they were going to go. I literally thought this movie was about, I knew it was a bad boss, and I thought they were going to like play pranks on him or some shit. I didn't know they were gonna like put him in a sex sling in his own basement. That did not see any of that coming. And I hate that so many people have copped from this movie. It's one of those things where this movie's obviously influenced a lot of other movies that mm-hmm. I've already seen. So when you go and you see the first movie, it's less impressive.
Yeah.
And so I have to keep reminding myself, like, no, this is where
this was the first. This is where all those ideas came from. Yeah. Or where the ideas came for all those other movies.
So it was even so much more fun than Working Girl.
Yeah, it was a lot more fun. I mean, like, being high and watching the movie for the first time was hilarious because I was with them. Like, I was laughing like they were laughing when they started smoking. And it was just so funny to me. And, yeah, like, how they were imagining all the stuff that they were going to do or how they would treat him if they had the, if they could turn it around or whatever, you know? And then, like, what they ended up doing was so much worse.
Yes. I was like, how are you getting
Except for the poisoning part, you know? Like, except for that part. And then, but that one also had, but, and so it's funny because it also had the woman that, you know, like, went against all these other women. But it wasn't because they were women or she was trying to save her job or keep her place or whatever, right? She just wanted I can't find words so late at night, but she just wanted the accolades from her boss. Not, you know, like, she's doing a good job of keeping the office the way he wants it to be. You know, he didn't like the mementos. He didn't like the personal things, you know, like, she felt like so honored that he wanted her to go to, you know, like, a language learning school to learn these languages for, like, what would come up, you know. It wasn't just that, you know, she was trying to get ahead off the backs and ideas of these other characters. And you've had that character in that is, like, letter of the law type person, right? And so whatever goes on in the office, they're the tattletale and gossip and tell everything to the supervisor, right? That person's in the office often.
Teacher's pet. I disagree. I think she is a picture of competition, but and then I don't remember what happens to her though. Was she main? No, they just sent her away.
They so just sent her away.
Right, because the writers, which by the way, Jane Fonda came up with the story, and then one of the writers is a woman, so that might be why it's a little bit more, you know, less patriarchal. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, I guess you're right. If they really wanted, if she was supposed to represent the inner competition between women, then they would have done. She would have had a worse ending than just sent away to get out of their hair,
mm-hmm. and then coming back to find. I mean, because she comes back to her job, she got a wonderful vacation, language learning, all that stuff. Right? She comes back to her job. She just doesn't come back to the same boss that she thought she had when she left. You know. I mean, they did well by her too, and she was the reason that they were in the trouble that they were in with the boss, right?
Dabney Coleman did a great job. He was great.
God, yes. He was so annoying.
All three of the women, of course, were great. Trying to think. Yeah, I was just super surprised at what the movie was, because it just wasn't what I thought it was.
I wasn't expecting it. Yeah, I actually thought 9 to 5 would be more like what I got from Working Woman.
Yeah,
like, really and truly. And Working Woman, like you said, Working Girl.
Now I gave you a what were you gonna say? Sorry.
No, I was just gonna say Working Girl, like, the acting. Like you said, Alec Baldwin did not represent somebody who just, you know, become a fisherman for a living. He, like, looks like the rich guy that is playing Slamming like a Staten Island guy.
Yeah.
Right? Melanie Griffith's acting. Like, I don't... What else has she been in? I mean, I know I've seen stuff with Melanie Griffith in it.
Like, but, like... The only other movie I know is Milk Money.
Oh, well, I mean, it was just like, like my, I was trying to understand why she was in it. I know why Sigourney Weaver's in it. I know why Harrison Ford is in it. How do we get Melanie Griffith? Why? How is she the character?
Sigourney
Weaver. What are they trying to say by having her there?
Oh, I Sigourney think she's Weaver. Got, I think it's because she's got a Marilyn Monroe thing. She talks like a girl. She's a she's very breathy. They kept putting her in panties. They kept putting her in underwear. I mean, that was it wasn't just the tit shots. It was also they kept, like, I think 30 seconds in we see her in garters.
Well, like, I mean, it was longer than that, but yes. Relatively shortly.
Did not take long. I think because she had a Marilyn Monroe quality to her.
She had a body for sin.
She had a body for sin and breathy. She had a voice.
Right. Well, I mean, Harrison Ford says it when she walks in, you look like a woman, unlike all these other women who are trying to look like men.
Which, oh, that's a good line, because I wanted to talk about that, about how, like, they want to conform you to the patriarchy, but then they hate you as soon as you become one of them.
Right.
Very close to the trans shit that we're dealing with now. But that's part of any of oppressive system. They want you to assimilate, but as soon as you do, they then hold that against you. That's reminiscent of one of the Justins, the Tennessee Three, where they tried to Fox News found out that code switching is real, and so they tried to say that one of the Justins, because he did a student president ad when he was younger with a very like white voice, and then when he's getting reinstated into the Tennessee State House, he's doing sort of a preacher voice, and so the white people on Fox News tried to say that means he's inconsistent and a fraud.
You're a liar at that point. Yeah,
they want you to assimilate, and then they hate you for it.
Yeah, they hate you when you can do it. Well, I mean, but like the assimilation is the assimilation part too is where, I mean, like, of course this can't happen if you're black in white society, right? Like, you're just always black. But thinking back to how the Germans describe Jewish people integrating into society, and how they can trick some people into thinking that they are whatever, right? And so that is part of, it's very similar to what you were describing, but the trans issue is they are afraid that they're going to be mistaken and think that a trans woman and like fall for a trans woman or be attracted to a trans woman, and then in their head that trans woman is a man, and then they're going to hate themselves for it, and then that's going to make them, you know, violently reject what
which is why they never think about trans men. And then when someone said on TikTok that, like, okay, you want me to go into the women's restroom now, and the right wing is freaked out because, like, wait a minute, you can't go to the women's restroom. It's like, no, you literally made that illegal for me not to.
Right.
I look like this. I am a trans man that you did not know.
Right.
You are now making it easier for people to go into bathrooms that you don't want in bathrooms.
Right.
Well, what, you know, from what I understand, part of the whole thing about how the anti-Semitic trope of Jewish people run the banks and stuff. So they made it impossible in a lot of places in Europe for them to bank. So then they set up their own institutions. And then they use that to vilify them.
Right.
And it's like, what the fuck do you want me to do? But anyway,
the acting is far superior 9 to 5 versus Working Girl. The story is far superior 9 to 5 versus Working Girl. Like, I'm kind of mad that my favorite comedy, Bob's Burgers, did an episode where where I think it's called Work Hard or Die Trying Girl, because they do competing musicals based off of Die Hard and Working Girl. So I knew the A Mind for Business and A Bod for Sin part line well before I ever saw the movie. I mean, like, years ago, because I, you know, that's a really fun episode. that they do when they combine the two. they do it separately, and then they eventually combine the two so every kid can take part in the play. And I'm mad that it's working, girl. Like, it should have been 9 to 5.
Yeah. 9 to 5. But, you know, harder.
Working Girl did come out around the same time that Die Hard did, so.
Yeah, makes more sense. Probably 88.
It makes more sense. It's a sassy sister film to Die Hard. Except Die Hard is also a better movie.
Yes. I gave you a challenge. Did you find
the Secret of the Coveney? Oh, I didn't find him. I forgot that I was looking for the Coveney, so when I watched it, I wasn't looking for him.
It is just a flash during the at the bar during the bridal shower. He's part of Joan Cusack's party at the bridal shower. It's just a flash of his face. He doesn't even have a line. But I saw it, and I was like, hold the phone. Is that goddamn David Duchovny? Because we already have Kevin Spacey, Oliver Platt, Alec Baldwin, Melanie Griffith, Harrison Ford, Sigourney Weaver, all these people. And then I was like, is that fucking David goddamn Duchovny? And I looked it up. He's in the credits. And I think it says, like, bridal shower goer or in the bar. He doesn't even have a fucking name. And so that I want to give people the challenge, see if they could find it. Bad movie, bad story. Did you notice too? So we see her have her 30th birthday, and then you might not have caught this. We see Harrison Ford's file. He's 40. So you also have the male fantasy of the much younger woman too. Just a fondant on top of that cake. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but she looks so old with the hairstyle that she makes for herself that you wouldn't know she was...
did like do a makeover and looked worse. Like, I know we were talking about high hair, but like that curly short bob she did, I think was worse than.
And it's funny, like if they did close-ups of her, she's gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. But like the far off, especially when she's wearing the big ass shoulder pads and everything. She just looks old and tired and like in ill-fitting clothes. And it's just like, that's what we were doing in the 80s? Is that what we were doing in the 80s? I know for a fact that I definitely had churchy type clothes that were suits that had shoulder pads in them.
It was a thing.
It was a thing. I remember that. 12 years old, 13, you know, like literally as I moved towards being a middle schooler, shoulder pads everywhere. But I just like, there's still a part of me that's just like, this is not fathomable that this is what we were looking like in the 80s.
Oh, another part.
I'm glad I was black. We looked similar, but different.
Another addition to the programming messaging in this movie is the only time we see Harrison Ford at his office. He doesn't go to sleep. He immediately puts on deodorant, changes his shirt, and then gets a standing ovation from everybody at work. That's the only time we see him at work at his office. It's like, I guess there was a meeting room we see him in. But the point is like, what the fuck? They wasted time, running time on the movie for that scene.
Yeah,
and that's all that happened. Besides, there was a phone call, but again, he could have been doing other things. It was very weird.
Any other thing besides showing us that he sleeps at his office? He has a backup shirt, brand new, crisp shirt.
Works so hard. He's got that grind mindset. He's grinding.
He's already doing the stuff that. Yeah, exactly. So it's just like she has an idea, and he's already seeing that come into play, right? And it's just like, they're both naive in this movie. It's like, does anybody that made this movie know anything about business?
Evidently, Harrison Ford does it because he fuck it up. But he's still integral to her success. And she comes in with one idea and blows the doors off the hinges.
Blows the door off everything.
Definitely speaks to the mediocrity of white men. And then, Sigourney Weaver. I don't like her in this movie.
Well, but I don't think we see her enough either. You know, I mean, like, they brought her in to be the villain, basically. Then they get rid of her enough to let Melanie Griffith do her thing. And then they bring her back in at the end to be the villain. And it's just like, I kind of wanted to see more of her. Like cut to her having a fun life with all the people.
The party and her.
While she's in her cast. Yeah.
And her negligee, of course, again, because it's male gazey all over the place.
Yeah.
You touched on something. You touched when you were talking about how Melanie Griffith is surrounded by nothing but people who want to take from her, no support system. And mm-hmm. you talked about how Sigourney Weaver talked when we first are introduced to her, and how she's like, "We're on the same team. There's no I in team. I'm here for you. You're here for me. Mm-hmm. I know I get paid more, but we're all the same level." Like right. That also adds to the insidiousness on two levels. First off, just having someone lie to her face. I bought into it. I didn't know what was going to happen. And so I bought into it. I did.
I 100% knew what was going to happen. This is a movie in 1988.
True, but I was still just like, I like the way she's talking. I would like to talk mm-hmm. that way. So not only does it have her lie, but it also, like we've talked about before, how writers will put the good words in the mouths of the villain mm-hmm. so that we're just, and that programs us to be wary of anyone who says the right things,
right?
Like that, like says anything, not just the right things, but like things that should be true.
Right.
It's poisoning the well on what we should be doing. And so it Agreed. Adds to that too. It's just so.
Yeah. Yeah. So like we can't have somebody do that. Yeah. We can't have somebody try to help us in the work environment. Because what pop culture has shown us is that anybody trying to help us is really only trying to help themselves. So it makes us as actual working class people wary of anyone that might possibly help us, including, you know, unionization, including, I don't know, just like the benefits of understanding the way that working conditions are in our work environment. Anybody that is helpful, we are hardwired to distrust, not hardwired to, because that means it's internal, but we are taught from a very young age, if we're consumers of movies and television, that anybody who is willing to work for our benefit is actually not in offering us any good thing.
We tried to take a slight pivot to just focus on the entertainment value, and this movie is so bad that we're still back to talking about how bad the politics are, because they're so bad. It's from title to end credits. It's just a lie. It's so bad. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, The superior movie is 9 to 5 for sure.
Most deaf. And I'm still blown away by only 8 years. I mean, yeah. It just
what a difference, right?
The neoliberal turn and how it's changed what feminism is, what work is, what success is, like just rotted those ideas. It's very interesting. I mean, I know Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin and even Dolly Parton. Sorry, Dollywood season pass holders, right. Come from a leftist point of view to be, you know, somewhat to begin with, but still just nuts. But
yeah.
So I recommend if you like looking at movies the way I do, in the way that we do, I would recommend watching these right after each other so you can sort of get like that immediate contrast.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean,
it's, as gross as it is, it's fascinating.
Oh, agreed. So 9 to 5 is streaming on HBO Max, and mm-hmm. Working Girl, you would have to buy $3.99 on Amazon Prime.
Which if you don't want to, that I'm sure it'll cycle eventually back to a streaming site.
But right. It was on Netflix
simultaneously.
Right. Well, 9 to 5 I think is pretty much gonna stay on HBO Max.
Okay. Well, maybe ZP in it. Maybe in Switzerland they've got both movies on Netflix. I don't know.
Maybe.
That's always the commercial on the VPN spots. It's like, I'm not doing it.
Exactly. So that's 9 to 5 and Working Girl from in front of the telly perspective. So what do you have on your countdown?
I got 3 things. In 2 days, I've got season 3 of the other two. In 10 days, we've got season 3 of The Great. And in 12 days, we've got the last season of Fear the Walking Dead, which I've started binging. I finished The Walking Dead, and now I've started rewatching Fear the Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I'm going to start watching The Walking Dead.
So I would suggest people, we should throw that up now. Take your time, but go re-binge The Walking Dead. It is a completely different experience. Stephanie's rewatching it now. She says she's still getting frustrated by things that she was frustrated before. Me personally, I was less frustrated by Carl. I was less frustrated by the search for Sophie. Sophia, I can't remember. It made the good parts better. And then I cannot wait to go over the last 2 seasons with Angel. It's going to be really good. That's going to be coming up.
So I've got to watch like 50 seasons so that we can talk about the last 2.
11, and there's a couple that are only 6 episodes for some reason.
I'm just kidding. Okay, for me and my countdown, in 2 days I have Star Wars Vision. I was particularly interested in the cartoons that were going to be created by all these different cartoon creators from various locations, including some of the anime ones. So this is going to be really interesting as far as I'm concerned. But I also like cartoons and, you know, shit that they make for kids, because I find that their wholesomeness is something that I enjoy. In 2 days, I also have the other 2. In 3 days, Harriet the Spy. I don't know why I don't have The Great on my list, because I've had The Great before on my list. So whenever that happens, in 8 days, how far are we going out?
14.
Yeah. In 8 days, I have The Muppets Mayhem on Disney Plus. Also African Queens on Netflix in 8 days. In 8 days, Class of 09, which is basically a suspense thriller following a class of FBI agents set in the near future, where the U.S. criminal justice system has been transformed by artificial intelligence. The group of FBI agents who graduated from Quantico in 2009 are reunited following the death of a mutual friend, spanning 3 decades and told through across 3 interweaving timelines. The series examines the nature of justice, humanity, and the choices we make that ultimately define our lives and legacy. But really, because Brian Tyree Henry is in this, that's why I want to watch. There are other people, Brian J. Smith, that I've seen in some other stuff, and I think he is okay. He was in Quantico. He was in Sense8 as Will Gorski. I don't know if you watched Sense8.
I tried. I didn't like it. I didn't get into it. I know everybody loves it. Everyone loves it so much that I'm going to give it another chance. I just haven't gotten there.
I loved Sense8. I love what they did with it when they realized it wasn't going to go forward, all that stuff. So yeah, if you recognize him from that. But Brian Tyree Henry, I think, has done some really good work. He was the only good thing in Bullet Train.
He's also from Atlanta, the show. Atlanta.
Yeah.
That's where I first recognized started paying attention. I don't know if that's the first time I saw him, but that was the first time I noticed him.
He's also the voice of the dad in Into the Spider-Verse. Oh, he was in Eternals.
Yes, he was. He was
as well.
Guy who wanted to build a steam engine and put it.
Help people out earlier. Okay, so what else do I have? In 10 days, City on Fire from Apple TV. It's from the maker of Gossip Girl and the OC, so I expect it to be terrible, but whatever.
Perfect.
Black Knight on Netflix in 10 days. Mulligan. So Black Knight is in a dystopian 2071 devastated by air pollution, a refugee fights to join the ranks of the powerful delivery man for access to food and survival. Now, isn't there like a game where the guy who plays Daryl in The Walking Dead is basically like a postman or something?
Yeah, and actually a really way more... I waited till... When I found out that's all it was, I waited till it came on sale, and then I played it, and I had a lot of fun.
Oh, okay. So, that feels like what this show is about. But it's got, I think, Korean titles?
Okay, I was going to say, I see a Korean show.
Yeah, it's Korean. No, so, this is going to be a subtitles read, but... It'll be interesting.
I'm out.
I feel like I've seen Sung Soon Hung and stuff.
The deaf character on The Walking Dead popped up, and I was like, I don't know. I know. I'm not reading this. I don't know what's going on. She's doing something.
Let's see. What else do I have? In 10 Days, Mulligan. This is going to be on Netflix as well. It explores the life, explores what life looks like after an alien attack destroys Earth and the survivors are forced to start civilization all over again. Who is the... Daniel Radcliffe is a voice. Kevin Michael Richardson is a voice. Tina Fey. Oh, we talked about this. Phil Lamar.
Yeah, Tina Fey.
Because you realize that I'm on the Tina Fey train that you're on.
The anti-Tina Fey wagon.
I still think she's funny.
I do not like what's that show that everybody loves with Alec Baldwin?
30 Rock.
I don't. Yeah, I tried to watch that show so many times because of how much everybody liked it, and I just I could. It's obviously on a wavelength, and I could just never.
You're just never. Yeah. And Paramount Plus.
It's one of those things where like. When so many people like something that you don't, you just have to give like, this is probably good, and I'm not going to tell you it's shit. It's just not me.
It's just not for you. I mean, like, and sometimes, I mean, it's just like you, the USA shows, right? You or TNT shows. Some what of them were actually this pretty good. They just, huh?
The, what you're referring to that I've talked about before is that USA, it was USA, and it was just a certain era. Burn Notice. Psych,
yeah.
Some Leverage,
White Collar,
White Collar
Leverage. Suits. Yeah,
I just don't like it.
Yeah, like none of them, and it's like some of them are actually pretty good, or they're silly, with some good stories in there. But you know, whatever. So in 10 days, RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars on Paramount Plus, and The Untucked as well. We're also due. A Queer Eye season 7 in 10 days on Netflix. And, oh, I do have The Great in 10 days. Okay. I just had so many ones that were coming up sooner that The Great was all the way down on my list.
I got to rewatch the first few seasons. I remember it being super entertaining. And then when I looked up the historical, the historical accuracy, it just wasn't even close.
Yeah. No,
and yeah, and there was even an episode. I think we went over it. Like, we actually did do this show, and there was, I'm remembering now, there was an episode where they released all the serfs and found out that was a bad idea, and then I got really mad.
Yeah, they did not do a good job of that.
But Nick Holt's great.
Yeah, I mean, the entertainment value for that show is definitely high. So it was funny in parts. Sobering in other parts, but Nick Holt does a good job of being Elle Fanning does a good job, but Nick Holt is definitely an excellent psychopath man baby, and he plays that all with aplomb.
I can't wait to see Renfield. I might actually go.
Oh my gosh, me either. I'm definitely watching it at home, but I cannot wait.
I'm not.
I feel like the only thing that'll get me out to the theater is Into the Spider-Verse. I mean, Guardians? Maybe Guardians.
It comes out in 3 days.
Oh, then no. I'm going to be too tired. I'm negotiating. I'm going to be too tired.
For a length of time?
Well, that's not how Juno movies work.
Oh, okay. I'm so mad because I swear to God, I looked up, when is that Flash movie coming out? I swear it said April 28th. So I started telling people, like, oh, shit, I know where I'm going to be on the 28th. I don't give a fuck. I miss Shazam, but I'm not going to miss Keaton back as Batman. And then that last trailer came out, said June. I was like, what the fuck? Looked on Wiki, and it said, oh, it's been June since December. I'm like, what the fuck did I Google that came back April 28th? Like, I felt like such a biggest dumbass. I had to tell people, no, we're not going to theater on Thursday. So dumb. Cannot,
poor baby.
Wait, die. You couldn't drag me out of the theater to go see The Flash. I'm going to be there for Keaton back as Batman. I haven't seen
the newest trailer, so.
Oh, well, he drops the Let's Get Nuts line. And I'll admit, like, when I first saw it, I was like, that's lame. They're just going to do all the lines. That's such fan service shit. And then I was like, hold on. Michael Keaton's existence in this movie is fan service. I don't give a shit. I want to hear, fuck it, someone's dancing with the devil in some kind of moonlight. I don't give a shit. If you don't say that line, I'm burning the theater down. I'm here for fan service.
Wow.
And if you just happen to surprise me with a posthumous Kevin Conroy voice cameo, and you've got Batfleck in it, I mean, I'm just done with movies. I might retire from this podcast because they've just completed cinema for me.
Well, good thing they're not going to do that. Good thing they're not going to do that. So we can continue.
You don't know. We'll see.
We will see, yeah. And I'll bet you'll be back here to talk all about it.
Hell yeah. I'm going to spoil it.
Oh, man. Well, what are your plugs? Where can the people find you?
Follow me on Instagram and TikToks at Puppyganda Stickers. There aren't any posts yet because I'm still getting my shit together. That's all I got right now.
Puppyganda Stickers, which is now in our tags. So when it is open and up officially, you'll be able to see it and know where to go to see what Jacob is working on. And then you can find me on the interwebs at In Front of the Telly. And if you would like to write to us or answer Jacob's question, did you watch Working Girl and spot David Duchovny and was just like, what the what? Then you can send us an email at infrontofthetelly@gmail.com. So it's our podcast name @gmail.com.
You can also, if you want to tell us if you listen to us on fast speed and how do we sound, let us know how we sound. And you can also contact us at the Facebook group,
right, which is
searching In Front of the Telly in Facebook. We are the purple TV icon.
Yep. So yeah, thanks for listening, everybody,
and remember,
we'll be watching.